Chapter 4. Unison. It's perfectly wonderful. And then, said Mrs. Glossop, what do you think we had better do? Let Mr. Brown drive the old people to Nancy Taylor's one at a time, or put both of them in the buggy, and him lead the horse? Brown gasped. Now then, that's a question, said Mrs. Enderby. You see, we are all tired out, and any way we fix it, it's going to be difficult. For if Mr. Brown takes both of them, at least one of us must go back to help him, for he can't load them into the buggy by himself, and they so helpless. That is so, said Mrs. Taylor. T doesn't look o, how would this do? One of us drive there with Mr. Brown, and the rest of you go along to my house, and get things ready. I'll go with him. He and I together can lift one of the old people into the buggy, then drive her to my house and, but who will take care of the other one? Said Mrs. Enderby. He mustn't leave her there in the woods alone, you know, especially the crazy one. There and back is 8 miles, you see. They had all been sitting on the grass beside the buggy for a while now, trying to rest their weary bodies. They fell silent a moment or two, and struggled in thought over the baffling situation. Then Mrs. Enderby brightened and said, I think I've got the idea now. You see, we can't walk anymore. Think what we've done. 4 miles there, two to Mosley's, a six, then back to here 9 miles since noon, and not a bite to eat. I declare I don't see how we've done it, and as for me, I am just famishing. Now, somebody's got to go back to help Mr. Brown. There's no getting round that. But whoever goes has got to ride, not walk. So my idea is this. One of us to ride back with Mr. Brown, then ride to Nancy Taylor's house with one of the old people, leaving Mr. Brown to keep the other old one company. You all two go now to Nancy's and rest and wait. Then one of you drive back, and get the other one, and drive her to Nancy's, and Mr. Brown walk. Splendid! They all cried. H, that will do, that will answer perfectly. And they all said that Mrs. Enderby had the best head for planning in the company, and they said that they wondered that they hadn't thought of this simple plan themselves. They hadn't meant to take back the compliment, good simple souls, and didn't know they had done it. After a consultation, it was decided that Mrs. Enderby should drive back with Brown, she being entitled to the distinction, because as he had invented the plan. Everything now being satisfactorily arranged and settled, the ladies rose, relieved and happy, and brushed down their gowns, and three of them started homeward. Mrs. Enderby set her foot on the buggy step, and was about to climb in, when Brown found a remnant of his voice, and gasped out, Please, Mrs. Enderby, call him back, I am very weak. I can't walk, I can't, indeed. Why, dear Mr. Brown, you do look pale. I am ashamed of myself, that I didn't notice it sooner. Come back, all of you. Mr. Brown is not well. Is there anything I can do for you, Mr. Brown? I'm real sorry. Are you in pain? No, madam, only weak. I am not sick, but only just weak lately. Not long, but just lately. The others came back, and poured out their sympathies and commiserations, and were full of self-reproaches for not having noticed how pale he was. And they at once struck out a new plan, and soon agreed that it was by far the best of all. They would all go to Nancy Taylor's house, and see the Browns' needs first. He could lie on the sofa in the parlor, and while Mrs. Taylor and Mary took care of him, the other two ladies would take the buggy, and go and get one of the old people, and leave one of themselves with the other one, and, by this time, without any solicitation, they were at the horse's head, and were beginning to turn him around. The danger was imminent, but Brown found his voice again and saved himself. He said, But ladies, you are overlooking something which makes the plan impracticable. You see, if you bring one of them home, and one remains behind with the other, there will be three persons there, when one of you comes back for that other, for someone must drive the buggy back, and three can't come home in it. They all exclaimed, Why, sure lie, that is so. And they were all perplexed again. Dear, dear, what can we do? Said Mrs. Glossop. It is the most mixed up thing that ever was. The fox and the goose and the corn and things, oh, dear, they are nothing to it. They sat wearily down once more, to further torture their tormented heads for a plan that would work. Presently Mary offered a plan. It was her first effort. She said, I am young and strong, and am refreshed now. Take Mr. Brown to our house, and give him help. You see how plainly he needs it. I will go back and take care of the old people. I can be there in 20 minutes. You can go on, and do what you first started to do. Wait on the main road at our house until somebody comes along with a wagon. Then send and bring away the three of us. You won't have to wait long. The farmers will soon be coming back from town now. I will keep old Polly patient, and cheered up. The crazy one doesn't need it. This plan was discussed and accepted. It seemed the best that could be done in the circumstances, and the old people must be getting discouraged by this time. Brown felt relieved and was deeply thankful. Let him once get to the main road and he would find a way to escape. Then Mrs. Taylor said, the evening chill will be coming on pretty soon, and those poor old burnt out things will need some kind of covering. Take the lap robe with you, dear. Very well, Mother, I will. She stepped to the buggy and put out her hand to take it. That was the end of the tale. The passenger who told it said that, when he read the story 25 years ago in a train, he was interrupted at that point. The train jumped off a bridge. At first we thought we could finish the story quite easily, and we set to work with confidence. But it soon began to appear that it was not a simple thing, but difficult and baffling. This was on account of Brown's character, great generosity and kindliness, but complicated with unusual shyness and diffidence, particularly in the presence of ladies. There was his love for Mary, in a hopeful state, but not yet secure, just in a condition, indeed, where its affair must be handled with great tact, and no mistakes made, no offense given. And there was the mother wavering, half willing by adroit and flawless diplomacy to be won over now, or perhaps never at all. Also, there were the helpless old people yonder in the woods waiting their fate and Brown's happiness, to be determined by what Brown should do within the next 2 seconds. Mary was reaching for the lap robe. Brown must decide. There was no time to be lost. Of course none, but a happy ending of the story would be accepted by the jury. The finish must find Brown in high credit with the ladies, his behavior without blemish, his modesty unwounded, his character for self-sacrifice maintained, the old people rescued through him, their benefactor, all the party proud of him, happy in him, his praises on all their tongues. We tried to arrange this, but it was beset with persistent and irreconcilable difficulties. We saw that Brown's shyness would not allow him to give up the lap robe. This would offend Mary and her mother, and it would surprise the other ladies, partly because this stinginess toward the suffering old people would be out of character with Brown, and partly because he was a special providence, and could not properly act so. If asked to explain his conduct, his shyness would not allow him to tell the truth, and lack of invention and practice would find him incapable of contriving a lie that would wash. We worked at the troublesome problem until 3 in the morning. Meantime, Mary was still reaching for the lap robe. We gave it up, and decided to let her continue to reach. It is the reader's privilege to determine for himself how the thing came out. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.